The Big Scary Show is brought to you in part by Dark Imaginings, web design, creepy changing portraits, and much, much more. DarkImaginings.com.
For the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious, it's time for the Big Scary Show.
Buck Burdick at the Fear Asylum Haunted House in South Dakota, and you are listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hey, this is Wednesday 13, and you are listening to the Big Scary Show.
What's going on? It's Jack Daniels from Twisted Fields of Terror here in Prince Frederick, Maryland, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to the Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hey, everybody. Steve Schreibeis, makeup artist with the USS Nightmare, and you are listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hi, I'm Tom Savini from, let's see, lately, Django Unchained, Perks of a Wallflower, and Machete Kills, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hey, Sean Norman, Royal Township Haunted House in Brilliant, Ohio, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
You're listening to the Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is spring. It should be a joyous time, but I have to bring you some bad news. The unknown scare actor is no more. He has moved on from this earthly plane. What's even more troubling is his replacement, Meat Hook Jim, has disappeared. And we're hoping that you can help us find him. And you can start by listening to this edition of the Big Scary Show, as Badger brings us an interview with Jen Braverman of the Midwest Haunters Convention. And the Round Table of Terror is all about fire safety, as we have two firefighters that not only know how to inspect haunts, but own haunts themselves. Pay attention. It is worth its weight in gold. And we've got the usual segments, including deadline news, Storm's Rants in a Haunt Minute, and Veister brings us his take on Avengers Endgame. Be careful if you haven't seen it yet. Something missing, though, is Meat Hook Jim's segment. Like I said, we can't find him. So until then, we will proceed forward. And with the loss of the unknown scare actor, hopefully, somewhere, we can find him. All of this, and a little bit more, on the Big Scary Show.
Introducing the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention, May 17th through the 19th, 2019, at the historic Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. Featuring a trade show floor with over 40 vendors, a hearse and haunt vehicle show, over 30 hours of classes, a ghost hunt inside the reformatory, Q&As with industry leaders, a costume party, and trips to three local haunts. There's a pre-show bus tour on May 16th to Hudson Haunted House, Hauntville, and the famous Haunted Hydro. A portion of the proceeds will be benefiting the Mansfield Reformatory Preservation Society. Get more information and tickets today at OhioHalloweenAndHauntersConvention.com, OhioHalloweenAndHauntersConvention.com, or their Facebook page, Facebook.com/OHHC2019. That's the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention coming to Mansfield, Ohio, May 17th through the 19th. OhioHalloweenAndHauntersConvention.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for Deadline News here on The Big Scary Show with your host, me, Drew Badger, bringing you all the latest in the haunted house, Halloween, and horror industries. Hello everyone, this is Drew Badger, this is Deadline News for episode 184, and we're going to start off with some news on our 5,300th like on Facebook. The Big Scary Show would like to recognize Ian George of Virginia Beach, Virginia, for being our 5,300th like on Facebook. Thank you, Ian, and please continue to listen and tell your friends to do the same. Remember, folks, for every 100 likes we get on Facebook, we'll give out a shout-out. So once again, thank you to Ian George of Virginia Beach. And folks, remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at The Big Scary Show, or our Instagram page at Big Scary Show. We have this news from the Newburgh Civitan Zombie Farm in Newburgh, Indiana. All right, we know it's not actually time for Halloween, but for most of us in the Newburgh Civitan Zombie Farm, it is time to start preparing for the haunted season. Look, I know it's only May, but the Zombie Farm is the single largest fundraiser for the Newburgh Center and Junior Civitan. In turn, they take that money and help a number of organizations and nonprofits, including Easter Seals, Special Olympics, and Civitan International Research Center, just to name a few. Obviously, they need a little help and are currently seeking sponsors to help make the 2019 haunting season the best yet. Newburgh Civitan Zombie Farm is currently seeking those sponsors. There's a number of sponsorship levels and they start at just $100. Each sponsorship level has an incentive and obviously the higher the donation, the bigger the incentive. To see a full list of sponsorship opportunities and their respective incentives, visit zombiefarm.net. We have this news from Spooky Empire in Orlando, Florida. Or is it? Because it's halfway to Halloween, we are making this very special announcement. We are officially announcing that Spooky Empire will be held in Tampa this year, October 31st through November 3rd. This has been a very difficult decision, but a necessary one. Due to an increase in size and scope of logistics, we were unable to locate venue space in Orlando large enough that also had the available dates to host our growing Dark Side of Comic-Con. For the last 16 years, Florida has always been home to the convention, so Tampa allows us to stay true to our roots while also remaining close to home. We hope that you will join us for what will be an amazing Halloween celebration, a first-time four-day event kicking off on October 31st. For those of you in the Tampa area that have never been to Spooky Empire, we look forward to welcoming you to the event. The City of Tampa, the Tampa Convention Center, and the surrounding hotels and businesses are very excited to host our crazy weekend, and they've welcomed us with open arms. We are very excited for this opportunity. You can find all information for the Convention Center, the host hotel, and overflows, tickets, exhibitor tickets, and tattoo booths, and more. And we'll be adding more and more info over the coming weeks, including guest announcements and all the amazing events we have planned at our website, SpookyEmpire.com. Keep checking in for more info and updates, and let the madness begin.
Speaking of madness, we have this news from the Halls of Madness in Paris, Illinois. Every Memorial weekend, the Slaughter Farm opens its rusty gates to your mid-season haunted attraction and worst fears, sometimes joining forces with our killer friends from Night Terrors of Effingham on one horrific turf. From 8 to 12, Friday and Saturday, May 24th and 25th, come on out, but don't come alone, because we will be waiting. Tickets are only $10. Get more information at their Facebook page, facebook.com/Halls Madness Insanity. We have a little more Illinois news, this time from the Massacre Haunted House in Montgomery, Illinois. The Massacre Haunted House is hosting a haunted garage sale on May 19th. This event is one day only. Come get some quality props and accessories for your haunt, home haunt, yard haunt, Halloween party, or spooky house decor. This year it's bigger and better than before, now featuring more vendors to buy things from, not just us. We'll have handmade creations, prop companies, and much more. Doors open at noon, so get there early to get some great Halloween deals. Vendor space is still available. Please contact the Massacre Haunted House Facebook page for more information on vending. That's facebook.com/massacrehaunt. We have a little hiring news, this time from the Haunted Hills Estate in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. Scare people, make money. After 15 years of scaring Western Pennsylvania, Haunted Hills Estate is changing everything from the ground up. Join our critically acclaimed cast of scare actors and get paid to perform the greatest job in the world. Auditions will take place on site on the following days: Sunday, May 19th from 1 to 4, and Friday, May 31st from 6 to 9 p.m. All applicants must fill out the online application prior to auditioning. In 2018, Haunted Hills Estate was named the number one haunted attraction in Western Pennsylvania by thescarefactor.com. So don't wait. Fill out an application today and become a part of Pennsylvania's fastest-growing Halloween event. Get a link to the application and more info at their Facebook page, facebook.com/Haunted Hills Estate. And finally, we have some recruiting news from our very own Meat Hook Jim and Maul. Greetings, all. With Maul booking up quick for the 2019 season, I am looking to recruit scare actors in the southern Ohio to northeastern Indianapolis areas. If you're a freelance actor or just want a change of venue, drop me a private message on Facebook or email me haunter.incognito@gmail.com. Get more information on Maul at maulmonsters.com or their Facebook page, facebook.com/Maul, M-A-U-L, Actor Services. Remember, folks, if you have news in the haunted house, Halloween, or horror industries, and you want it on the show, email it to us, news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the show. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Chris Thomas, music for Haunts, A Lonely Hell on the Big Scary Show. Thank you.
Yes, folks, the rumors are true. The Midwest Haunters Convention has relocated to Chicago, happening June 7th through the 9th at the Renaissance Convention Center in Schaumburg. It may be a new location, but it's the same great MHC you have come to love over the years. Don't forget the pre-show bus tour on June 6th, visiting four Chicago area haunts. The Friday night bus tour on June 7th, hitting the Hell's Gate Haunted House. All the classes, the vendor floor, the body painting expo, and of course the best masquerade ball in the industry. Get yourself to Chicago for the Midwest Haunters Convention June 7th through the 9th. Get tickets and much more information at MidwestHauntersConvention.com. That's MidwestHauntersConvention.com. And ladies and gentlemen, again, for the past almost year, you know we've been talking about it, and it's almost time, just a couple of short weeks away, the Midwest Haunters Convention in Chicago. Actually, Schaumburg, but Chicago nonetheless, you know. It looks to be a very, very interesting show, you know, the floors filling up with vendors, the tours are getting finalized, everybody's excited about it. You know, the last show we had Kelly Collins talking about Midwest, the tours, and a lot of the stuff that he's involved with. But let's talk to the head honcho in charge regarding Midwest Haunters Convention, Jen Braverman, ironically also in Chicago. How are you, Jen?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, it's excellent. A shame we didn't get to see you during Transworld. You were kind of under the weather there. Hope you're feeling better. What was it?
I don't know. It was just some really, really bad virus. I don't know that I've ever been so sick. You know, a lot of times you're sick and you can kind of just work through it, but this was just one of those things that just doesn't happen in that way. I don't know that I've ever been so ill.
Yeah, you looked, from what I had heard from people, you're flat on your back, you weren't moving, and you know, we were hoping you were going to be better, and thankfully you got over it, and you're on your feet, and you are ready almost for MHC to make the big move to Chicago, correct?
Yes, we're really, really, really excited about the fact that we're moving to Chicago.
Now, I'm not going to talk about the stuff that Kelly talked about. He did an excellent job talking about the pre-show tours, the Friday night tours, and all that stuff on the previous show. But I don't think I've ever asked you this question, Jen. How long ago was it that you decided that Columbus had run its course and it needed to be moved to someplace? And why Chicago? How long and how hard was that decision to make?
You know, it was one of those things that we kind of analyzed the show when we first took it over from Kelly and Barry. We looked at it wondering if Columbus was the right place for it. And we still believe that at the time we were running it, it was. There was, you know, a lot of haunts and things like that that people still hadn't seen and were still excited to see. And people's enthusiasm about coming to Columbus was still really strong. But, you know, we had a couple of issues on a little bit different fronts. You know, some of the haunts for the pre-convention bus tours just didn't want to open up, and that became a little bit frustrating, but, you know, understandable. So, you know, during the season and during the summer, you know, they're trying to, you know, repair and do things and decorate and get everything ready for their season. So, you know, it's hard for them to open up, you know, off season for us. And the convention center in the city kind of changed how they looked at the convention as well. They became more conference based, and it was harder to get dates, you know, the dates that we needed for what really worked for the industry. And that was frustrating. You know, I tried to book a couple of years out and we couldn't make that happen. And they were just giving us kind of, you know, for all intents and purposes, crappy dates. And that kind of is really what ended up us moving the show somewhere else.
So was Chicago your first choice, or did you have other cities in mind?
Chicago was definitely one of our first choices. I mean, I think part of it is, there's about 120 haunts in a 60, and there's 60 haunts in about 120 mile radius. So, you know, that within itself is huge, you know, where we would be able to tour a bunch of different locations. A lot of people in the Chicagoland area is a big, you know, haunt community. So it just seemed like a natural fit for the show. A lot of our database and a lot of our, you know, for a lot of our shows are from the Chicagoland area. So it just seemed like a great fit. We did look into Cincinnati and a couple other places, but after analyzing things in Cleveland, Chicago really was going to be the next home for MHC.
And I remember when the rumors started flying, there was some negativity out there. There was like, why Chicago? And I'm never going back. And you know, the closer we get to it actually happening, a lot of those people have either changed their minds and they're excited about it now. What was the initial feedback that you got? Did you get a lot of negativity out of it? I mean, for me personally, it's no longer a drivable show, so I have to fly to Chicago. But, you know, that I can work out. A lot of other people were saying, yay, it's more convenient, and it's right in my hometown or my backyard. What was the initial reaction when it was finally made official?
You know, I was really nervous about it. I had a lot of conversations with Kelly and our team about it, but I was actually surprised. The exhibitors were thrilled. I mean, I had a lot of exhibitors that either never did the show or hadn't done it in years and really felt that the show needed a facelift, that it was getting really tired in Columbus. And so from the exhibitors, it was overwhelming positive. And what I was surprised about, too, was the Chicagoland area just all jumped in. All of the haunts, you know, in the area signed on. They're like, not only do we want to come to your show, we want to be show sponsors. We want to bring, you know, our crews that come in and everything else, and we really want to get behind you and try to make this work. So Chicago just overall just opened their arms, and that I really wasn't expecting. So that felt really, really good. Columbus, there were some people that were obviously disappointed. I mean, I can appreciate the fact that not everyone wants to travel, you know, that length of time, 6 hours in the car. But, you know, at some point, you know, unfortunately, I have to make it work for everyone. If the exhibitors weren't going to be doing as well every year on the show floor, the exhibitors would stop coming to the show. So I needed, as the show promoter, to also ensure that the exhibitors would start to do well and that they would see buyers and people would be buying, and that they would, and that buyers too would get to see different haunts so that they would get re-energized about the show. You know, that was part of it too. A lot of the buyers were sick of coming. It was the same old, and they weren't seeing new haunts. They weren't learning, you know, new things, and it was getting stale. So I think everyone was really ready for the change. I don't know that a few years prior they would have been ready, but I think by the time the change happened, exhibitors and buyers were both ready.
And
that's not to say that there still aren't people in Columbus that are frustrated we're not there. So I know there are.
Oh, I completely understand. Like I said, you know, I used to drive 8 hours from Charlotte to Columbus every year for this. And unfortunately, I can't make the show this year because it's my daughter's graduation. But you knew that prior. But definitely next year we'll be flying out or something like that. But speaking of vendors and exhibitors, I have noticed the show floor just in the last month has gone from like half full to like 98% full. And I'm seeing some vendors that, frankly, I have only seen at Transworld the last 3 or 4 years. It looks like they are, as you said, very excited to come to Chicago.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think everyone knows that it's going to be kind of a fresh market and that the buyers are excited to come in and buy. I mean, the attendance definitely is already growing for a lot of things, and the show floor is growing. So, you know, I think if anything, that makes me feel really confident that it was a good move in the right time. So we're excited to have everyone, and I think the show is ready for the move. So I'm really pumped. I think people are super excited to see all the haunts that, you know, are going to be on the pre-convention bus tour, as well as seeing Hell's Gate. You know, it's a newer haunted house that has a phenomenal reputation that a lot of haunt owners haven't had a chance to see yet. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's all good. I mean, I think we're really excited. We're doing some different stuff on the show floor than we've ever done to try to get the industry more involved. The kids zone is completely expanded. And there's just a lot of different things, you know, that we're going to try. I mean, over time, I know the show will continue to evolve, but I'm excited for what the future holds. And I'm really happy that all of the haunted houses in the area have really stepped up and are trying to make this show amazing.
I know that when we talked to Kelly at Transworld, he said he was shocked that almost half the people he talked to were not aware that you had moved to Chicago at this point. And he said by the second day, a whole lot more people did. So obviously the word is getting out there. Are you still getting inquiries from people saying, hey, can't wait to go to Columbus? Or are you still, you're not hearing from any of those people, I hope.
No, I'm not getting that kind of surprise. I was surprised when Kelly told me the same thing. I think part of the reason for the surprise for people is because at Midwest, we didn't really know at that point what we were doing. I was still waiting to see what the dates were going to be from Columbus for the following year, and nothing had been decided about Chicago. So I think that was maybe part of the surprise for some maybe people that were more local to MHC, because we didn't know where the show was going to be when the show ended.
Excellent. Like I said a couple of minutes ago, about a month ago, I looked at your vendor floor space, and I'll be frank, it looked sad. It looked like you only had about a third to a half of it full. I looked at it today, and it looks like you are almost 100% sold out. How much,
yes.
If you are an exhibitor, is there still time to maybe go in and display your wares?
Yeah, we have some booths left, and we have some tabletops left, so, you know, there's still booth space on the floor for people. But yeah, as you said, it filled up quite nicely, and we're really excited about, you know, the people that are coming. I think it's going to make for, you know, a really exciting show floor.
Now, Chicago is known for having a couple of other, shall we say, horror conventions. Days of the Dead is there. Flashback Weekend is there. I'm sure there are some Comic Cons and some other things. I mean, it's only the second or third largest city in the country.
For sure.
Are you marketing to those people as well? Is there an MHC booth at a Days of the Dead, or will there be one at Flashback in August? And I know that you market this a lot to haunters, and you know, I still have people asking me, is this open to the public? And I'm still seeing that on social media. Hey, is this MHC? Can anybody go? Because everyone's been talking about how Transworld's not technically open to the public. How are you? Are you doing a different type of marketing in Chicago?
Yeah, we're going to be doing radio ads on a couple of different stations. We're doing some billboards, definite public advertising. There's also a slime convention that's going on at the same time. I don't know if anyone has kids that are young enough to know what slime is, but those have become all the rage. And we're also co-marketing with them on things to kind of, you know, promote the show. But, yeah, I mean, Flashback Weekend definitely, you know, will, you know, it's after our show.
Sure.
But, yeah, we're definitely going to be hitting a lot of the cons in the area. And we are now, too. We've got a lot of people. We're also working with a Hearst Club and, you know, different people that are promoting our show in different places. We have a lot of haunt enthusiast groups that are around the Chicagoland area that have been taking our postcards and promoting us at all the different events they're going to. So, you know, anytime you go somewhere new, it takes a little bit of time to create brand awareness. But, you know, I definitely feel next year at this time, the Chicago market will know that, you know, MHC was here.
Oh, absolutely. I know Days of the Dead's in November, so that's also afterwards. But, you know, hey, do you have dates already for 2020? And are you already working on the tours and things for next year? And I guess it goes along with this question. Are you going to be in Chicago for the foreseeable future, or in 4 or 5 years you might go to another Midwest city?
I mean, I think that's a good question, but it's always hard to answer. I see us being in Chicago for a while. I think as long as people are still excited about going to the haunted houses and exhibitors are doing well on the floor, and as long as the buyers and exhibitors are happy, you know, we serve the industry. We don't really make decisions just based on what we want to do. It's what everybody wants to do. So if the feeling is Chicago's strong and everyone's happy there, we'll stay there. If the overall feeling is that it's been played and we need to move somewhere else to be able to see different haunted houses and be able to get different types of exhibitors, then we'll do that too. But, you know, right now our plan is to grow the hell out of the show. So that's kind of where we are with it.
Any last-minute news that we need to be made aware of before that's maybe coming, that's going to be announced in, say, the next few days before you get it up on the website?
No, I would say that, you know, we're still obviously tweaking our events and daily events and things like that. And I think it's just going to be a great show. I think, you know, there are a tremendous amount of buyers that don't typically come to MHC that are coming. And the same thing with the exhibitors. I think it's going to be a really fun show. I think the ball is going to be one of the biggest balls we've ever had. I think Hell's Gate is going to be one of the largest Friday night events we've had, with the bonfires and after parties and everything that John's doing. I think everyone's giving it its all. I know Basement of the Dead is going to, after the Thursday night, he's going to get out there and DJ. I don't know how many people have been to Basement of the Dead, but the energy around it is amazing. It's right in front of a casino, and he's going to be out there DJing, and we're cooking hot dogs and different things, and there'll be alcohol flying, and I just think it's going to be just one hell of a party, you know, as well as I think exhibitors are going to get a great opportunity to, you know, after Transworld, to really be able to sell their products.
I can only imagine what the zombie army is planning. Oh, geez.
I mean, the zombie army, all the haunts that are on the tour, all the sponsors of the show that are bringing out their icon characters and bringing out everyone in full force. I mean, I just think that it's going to be just one hell of a haunt convention, you know? So I think everyone's just really excited.
Well, Jen, I know you've got things to do, and I know you're busy, and I know it's only a few short weeks away. Let's go through the who, what, where, when, and why. The Midwest Haunters Convention, June 7th through the 9th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Hotel in Schaumburg. That is North Chicago. That is north of O'Hare, correct?
Yeah, it's about 7 miles from O'Hare Airport. Okay.
Excellent. You've got a pre-show going tour going on the 6th. Has that sold out yet?
We're just trying to figure out how many buses we're going to end up doing, you know, so it's just a matter of that. But there's still seats available. So if you haven't signed up for the pre-convention bus tour, you know, we'd love to have you.
That's a legendary thing that I'm sure Chicago will put their own special spin on it. You said there's a couple of floor spaces left for vendors, some tables, some booths. Of course, the giant mega party that you have every Saturday night is epic, and I'm sure that, again, Chicago's just going to make it just an amazing thing. So for all the information, for everything going on, the tours, the classes, the floor, open to the public, new location, a fresh start for the Midwest Haunters Convention 2019, what are the best websites and social medias for people to get that information?
You know, I would just go to MidwestHauntersConvention.com, and pretty much everything is on there. All the information about the hotels, the timing of everything, what seminars are available. We're really excited about the seminars that we're doing this year. You know, all the contests. You know, we still have spots available for the Bloody Mary Makeup Wars if people are interested in doing that. And, you know, if anything else comes up, obviously, you know, you can always call the office. And we're there, and you know, or email us, and we're here to answer questions if anything you guys need.
Fantastic. Jen, it's always a pleasure to have you here on the Big Scary Show. I know we won't have a booth this year, but we will have a presence there. So we are looking forward to hearing wonderful things about the Midwest Haunters Convention, June 7th through the 9th, up in Chicago. As always, thank you again for taking time out of your very busy schedule. My name is Drew Badger, and we're back to the Big Scary Show right after this.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is a Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, have you seen the latest video of a woolly mammoth wandering around in Siberia lately? Alright, it's fun, it's interesting, you know, you watch it, it's 10 seconds of this thing, and the size looks off, and it probably should, the video should start with Sci-Fi Channel Presents. It's not that good. But, honestly, I love this stuff. I love cryptozoology. I love cryptid animals. I grew up with legends, Jersey Devil, Mothman, all that stuff is awesome. And guess what? It's a basis for haunting and all things horror. It's absolutely awesome. And it makes me think, you know, we gotta keep looking for these things, you know. They've gotta be smart. You know, the animals that might or might not exist, you know, people want them to be endangered. I think we should take it one step further. I think we should make cryptids service animals. That's right, because if we actually do find these things, they've gotta be intelligent to be, you know, hiding from us all the time, not appearing on Google Maps or anything. I mean, they found Atlantis on Google Maps. They, you know, why haven't they found Bigfoot? They didn't find Atlantis, by the way. It's a map and it's gone. Make them service animals. How awesome would that be? Yes, I want a seeing-eye chupacabra. Awesome! So until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Store.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
First Jason, Witch Camp, on the Big Scary Show.
I was a magical child, just a little bit wise and a whole lot of wild. Make a potion and cast a spell. Turn lead into gold, but I can do that as well. Eyes above, oh, so below. Ain't nothing in this world didn't wanna know. But ears can hear and eyes can see. So my folks decided then they had to set me free.
Send the boy away for a summer at Witch Camp. Off you go to stay for a summer at Witch Camp.
Welcome to the wood. We call upon the elements, so mote it be for good. Five beauties formed a circle of perfect love and trust. Five kisses I was given into a new world I was thrust. We all come from the water, and unto her we shall return. Our hearts ablaze with fire that gives a light but doesn't burn. So merry and meet and blessed be. Be good to magic children and they will be good unto thee.
Send the boy away for a summer at Witch Camp. Off you go to stay.
gonna stay for the summer that witch came. Send the boy away for the summer that witch came. Off you go to stay for the summer that witch
What awaits you in the House of Seven Corpses is more than a fear you can't explain, a fate you can't prevent, a death you can't escape. The House of Seven Corpses holds a deadly secret. You must see it to believe it. There are 8 graves, 7 bodies, 1 killer, and he's already dead. International Amusement Corporation presents The House of Seven Corpses. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Death waits in The House of Seven Corpses.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Round Table of Terror here on the Big Scary Show, where you never know what's going to happen, and sometimes things do. You know, folks, if you've ever thought about getting into the haunted attraction business, or if you are an owner of a haunted attraction, you probably know what the scariest part about your haunt is. It's not necessarily the actors, the props, the animatronics. It's appeasing that pesky fire inspector or fire marshal that literally has the power to say, you're not open this year because something's wrong. You know, safety cannot be stressed enough, but a lot of people have that love-hate relationship with fire marshals and fire inspectors and all kinds of things. I remember Leonard Pickle dressing up as the evil fire marshal at a HauntCon costume ball a number of years ago, and he should have won first place if he didn't. But anyway, we want to talk a little bit about fire safety with a couple of people who know a few things about it, primarily firefighters. We have got Jack Beckwith on the line with us, who is from Prince Frederick, Maryland. He's a firefighter with the Annapolis Fire Department. He also is a haunt owner with Twisted Fields of Terror in Prince Frederick, Maryland. Jack, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Great to have you here. And also we have Buck. Is it Guy or Buck? How should we call you?
My mom calls me Guy, Drew, if you want to call me Guy, but everybody else calls me Buck.
All right. We've got Buck Burdick here, who's a firefighter with the Sioux Falls, South Dakota Fire Department, who both of these men do inspections. Buck has taught many, many seminars. He's a chaos instructor, teaches fire safety and all. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Drew. Glad to be here.
And we have our usual bevy of gahos here up in the not-so-frozen northeast anymore. We have Storm.
Greetings from my secret lair where I'm infusing shrimp with cocaine.
You know, if I was going to do drugs, it'd be cocaine.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, it's going to save so much time at Hollywood parties. And it'll be a hit in Vegas.
Oh, no doubt. We have down in Cincinnati our very own Meat Hook Jim.
Since we've got these firemen, folks, remember, no more lighting farts at your haunt.
Damn it. Up in Columbus, Ohio, getting ready to hit the road for a long road trip, we have the Haunstrumentalist, Jerry Vane.
All this time, I thought the scariest part of a haunt attraction was the porta-potties.
Yeah, we'll probably never do a round table on that. My name is Drew Badger. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we're talking fire safety. And, gentlemen, this question goes out to both of you. You can't stress the importance enough of fire safety. If I was getting ready to open a haunted attraction, and I know that the laws are probably different in South Dakota than they are in Maryland, is there a national set of standards that I need to know about regarding sprinklers and all sorts of safety, or is it very state by state?
So real quick, Buck, since you're the senior officer on this conversation, I'll allow you to address each of the questions first, and I'll do a follow-up if that's okay with you, sir.
He goes a shot across the mouth of being old, Jeff.
Yeah.
I think so. When it comes down to fire safety, and Jack, jump in anywhere you think what I missed, but okay. when it comes down to fire safety, everything comes down to what's called an NFPA standard. Mm-hmm. So any fire inspector, any firefighter, whoever your fire marshal is, chances are very high that they are going to be following an NFPA directive. Now, as an owner, or someone that's looking at opening a haunted attraction, what you should do is you should Google haunted house NFPA standards, and that will go ahead and give you all the NFPA standards for a haunted house. Now, when it comes down to sprinkler requirements, alarm system, and exits and passageways and all these types of things, well, that's all going to come down to how your code is written for your city and what type of building and what type of occupancy your building is labeled at. So I guess what I'm saying is, in a nutshell, is when it comes down to the inspection, they're going to follow the NFPA. When it comes down to sprinkler requirements, all that, that's going to come down to code. So what basically your owners are going to want to do, or as you're thinking about this, before you sign a lease, before you look at, you know, buying a building, whatever, first thing you need to find out what is the occupancy that this building is rated at. That's going to then tell you what type of sprinkler systems and what type of access and egress you're going to have after this. And then if you understand the NFPA haunted house standard as good as, if not better than your inspector, you're going to be better off. Did I miss anything, Jack?
No, absolutely not. Other than, you know, every state is absolutely different, and each fire marshal within each state, and then that's a trickle-down effect to your local jurisdiction, whether it be the county or township, borough, or what have you. But all of those fire marshals look towards the NFPA code or standard as a starting point, and then they build off of that. So the only thing I can recommend as a broad statement is to literally you Google your town, whatever your jurisdiction is, whether it's a county or a township or what have you. You just type that in along with state fire marshal, haunted house code, NFPA code, anything that has to do with haunted house. If you Google those words, they're going to lead you to a to the sites that pertain to your local code. Even if it's just your county or just borough or what have you, it's hard to, because there's just so many different types of jurisdictions, but if you search that, that's where a starting point, and then you go from there as far as doing online searches. I think going to your local fire department is equally a good starting point as well, whether it be a career or volunteer department. Those are also good starting points as well.
Now, I remember about 10 years ago when the HAA and IHA, the IAAH, I can't remember what it stands for, they got together and they created this thing called CHAOS, which, you know, they teach at Trans World. And they used to teach, I think, at Midwest, but now I think it's strictly at Trans World now. How is that different from the NFPA? And what exactly is CHAOS and CHAOS certification?
Well, the CHAOS certification has nothing to do with the NFPA standard. Nothing.
Right.
The NFPA standard is the National Fire Protection Act or agency, and that's, they write the standard. So when someone goes and gets a CHAOS certification, all that says is, okay, I've taken a bunch of classes. I have a base idea of what I need to do to be prepared to run this type of thing. But a CHAOS certification is an outstanding thing to get to give you an idea of what you're doing. But understand this, if you walk to your fire or your fire marshal and say, hey, listen, I'm going to open up a haunted house and I'm CHAOS certified, 99 out of 100 inspectors don't have a clue what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying don't get the CHAOS certification because it's super important. It's a great amount of information. But, you know, for whoever's listening to this, you don't think the two are intertwined because they're not.
Yeah. It's a starting point. Like, if you have zero fire department experience, and it literally is just a starting point for you to have a basic understanding. And at least in Maryland, there are points within our memorandum that state that if the occupant owner has made attempts to find or learn different aspects of the fire code, so on and so forth. There's here, I'm looking at it as we're talking, and we have five pages with 26 separate lines of the memorandum that cover the haunted houses for Maryland. I'm sorry?
You have the NFPA standard pulled up for haunted attractions?
Under the Maryland, that covers the minimum fire and life safety guidelines for haunted houses within Maryland. The guideline is based on the NFPA 1 code, 2016-101 life safety code, 2016 edition. That's what it's initially based off of. And for ours, it includes special amusement buildings as defined by the NFPA 101 life and safety code and those types of facilities. And they should meet requirements for assembly occupancies and, 12.4.7.1 and blah, 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 because there's so many different lines of the code. But again, if you just go back and search those NFPA codes that recover special assembly or haunted houses, they'll come up. So Maryland follows, certain codes under the NFPA. It's labeled within our what's labeled as a memorandum for through the Department of State Police, Office of State Fire Marshal.
So
It's probably one of the major things that people need to consider when they start out, finances aside and so on and so forth, because people get financing and they get this money or whatever. And they go to these shows and they see these fantastic props and it's all great. But, Buck and I know if you get into a building, you can't even accommodate having this event because you're not meeting the fire code. Then we see it every year. People couldn't open because the fire marshal shut us down. Well, that's because you didn't do your homework. You didn't know what was required within your jurisdiction. And it's that simple. It's a matter of doing your research, which should fall under your business plan. And if you don't have one, you're a dummy.
I see this all the time with various social media forums. Hey, I'm thinking of owning a haunted house. What do I need to do? Or I'm thinking of going from a yard haunt to a pro haunt. What do I need to do? And everybody talks about, well, get this book or go work here or talk to some owners. Nobody I see really talks too much about, you better make sure you appease that fire marshal, because like you just said, haunts every year. There's a very well-known haunt in Maryland that did not open a couple of years ago. And I believe that was due to some fire issues. We're not naming names here.
No, but yeah,
but, there was. And every year there seems to be that haunt says, due to circumstances beyond our control, we will be unable to open this year. And I'm wondering how many of them, if not all of them, are because they're in violation of some kind of safety code, whether it's fire, electrical, or other.
Well, I think to go a little deeper into this, Drew, and to add on to what Jack was saying is, I've done some consulting for some different attractions, and it all starts out, and Transworld's tough because I've been there, and I remember my first year. I walked in there, and my head fell apart, and my wallet fell open, and next thing you know, I was 20 grand. I didn't even know what the hell I was doing, but man, my van was full. So I get it. It's tough, but so if someone's looking at opening an attraction, whether you're going from a yard haunt, garage haunt to going pro or thinking about doing an escape room, whatever you're thinking about, a family entertainment center, whatever, it doesn't matter. Everything starts with a business plan because This is a business. You have to have a business plan. If you don't know what a business plan is, well, we better Google it. And if you don't understand, you better get a consultant or someone that understands. Now, part of that business plan then goes down into permitting, insurance, permitting, occupancy, rent, ownership, whatever. This is before. I'll just give you an example. I'm working with a client right now, and we've spent 7 hours of meetings, and all he wants to know is is this thing going to look like? What's the design? What's going to happen? And I'm like, well, I don't know yet because we haven't got there. We're still talking about insurance, permitting, business plan, da-da-da-da-da. So I understand how everybody's excited to build a haunted house. I was the same way, and they want to get going with it. But you have to start with the business plan. You have to understand your inspection. You have to understand how to work with your city and work with your city entities. And the straight-up answer, Drew, is – you need to go into, if you walk into a meeting, if you walk into fire prevention at Sioux Falls Fire Rescue and you talk to one of my inspectors and you walk in, you say, hey, my name is Jim and I'm going to open up a haunted house. What do I need to do? Well, you've already shot yourself in the foot and you've already cost yourself probably $50,000 with that statement. Why? Because you've done no research. You have no idea. They don't know either. So now what they're going to say is, well, you're going to need a sprinkler system and you're going to need this, 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 and this. And it can just open up a whole can of worms. Now, I'm positive or myself, we're not going to get you out of your fire. Well, your fire inspector is there to help you. All you need to do to be prepared for it is go in prepared. So if you walk into that same inspector and you say, hello, sir. My name is Jim. I am looking at opening up a public entertainment attraction here in the city. Here's my business plan. It's zoned this, this, and this. It's a rated this occupancy. From looking at the code, it looks like I need to do this, 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 and this. And I've done this, 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 and this. If you can list everything off that you've done and answer most of his questions before he even has answered a question, it's going to be way easier for you, because at least now the inspector is going to go, oh, well, at least this guy's done his homework, is trying to look and figure it out. Do you agree with me on this one, Jack?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because haunted houses are not on every block. There might be one per county and every state is obviously different. In Maryland, we're geographically packed in here tight. I'd have to imagine South Dakota, you guys are a lot more spread out. But literally, there's not a haunted attraction on every corner. So if you go in there prepared, showing, that you have researched the local fire code, that you have made every effort to meet it, that you did take some training. You know, you're not a firefighter, but you took these chaos classes, and you can show the inspectors that this is what was entailed, and, you know, that you came prepared, and that you do have a business plan, and you have a mapped out illustration of your haunted attraction, and you've reached out to your local fire chief and the department that is within that first due area, and so on and so forth. You've made every single effort that you possibly could. And if you've done that, then they're like, okay, this guy's serious. Like, he, and they might point out, and one thing that I can add to that is, don't do it in September. Do it in, you know, do it in June or July, and give yourself that time to correct things that need to be corrected. Because the last thing you want to be doing is at the end of September, you're dealing with code violations and you can't even open. And that is a big possibility. But all you're doing is avoiding the inevitable by waiting. You're avoiding the inevitable. And if you want to gamble, with not saying anything at all, be prepared to shell out tens of thousands of dollars of fines on top of not even opening and making the money for the whole entire season and losing whatever it is that you spent up until that point. Use those numbers in your head.
Well, it's an interesting term you use there too, as gambling, because, you know, as an owner, you need to be responsible, and this is a safety matter. This is, you know, you're not gambling with if you're going to make a few extra dollars or if you're going to work. You're gambling with people's lives if you're unsafe and don't know what your facility is.
Absolutely. But all too often, people think that they're doing something on the safest possible manner without having had educating themselves and not following the rules, and that's what tends to get them into trouble on that aspect of life safety. But they don't think about that. They're thinking about not even opening at all and losing the money that they spent thus far, and that's what they're worried about, because that's what they've already had to experience. They've spent the money. Now they need to make it back. Now they're like, if I don't open, then I don't make my money back. So I'm just not going to say anything. And that's the gamble. So it's more than just one gamble. It's not just one thing that you're gambling on. But nonetheless, it is a gamble if you choose not to say anything.
I do want to remind everybody, you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show, talking fire safety and safety in general at your haunt with Jack Beckwith and Buck Burdick, our usual co-host. We're going to take a very quick break, and we will be right back.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Bain takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Black Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from instrumentalist Jerry Bain. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
And we're back to the Roundtable of Terror. We are talking fire safety. Very important topic these days for any haunted attraction owner. We have Buck Burdick in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Jack Beckwith, Prince Frederick, Maryland, our usual co-hosts. And, you know, you can't talk about fire safety without talking about the Great American Fire in New Jersey back in the 80s, I believe. And people still to this day talk about the station fire up in Rhode Island, Storm. I know you've had some experience. You know, you were in Jersey when that fire happened, correct?
For Great Adventure, Six yes. Flags Great Adventure in 84. Yeah, I was like 7 or 8, but I do remember it happening, and it was, you know, such a thing because that was a huge attraction, and you know, it was pretty much a trailer haunt built up seasonally in the amusement park, and, you know, just there's so much codes and things that weren't enforced, things which, I mean, you couldn't imagine nowadays. They had chains on the emergency exit doors because you had kids sneaking in and going into different parts of the haunt. Actually, 8 teenagers passed away in that with the smoke inhalation and the fire itself. And that, I mean, that was just a huge thing. It was just, you know, a ton of codes just weren't enforced both locally, but, you know, it was different departments. Is this a local thing? Is this a state thing? Is this managed by the board that handles your amusement parks? Or is this something that should be structural? You know, is a lot of that stuff which wasn't addressed correctly. And, you know, in both of those situations, the station fire and that, it's just this perfect storm of little things that are overlooked and done and shortcuts taken. And what's amazing is, you know, and I think we'll lead into talking about materials and such, too, is both of them pretty much were probably set the same way. You know, they suspect that the fire at the haunted attraction at Great Adventure was a teenager walking through some of the back areas holding a lighter, and an open flame, he bumped into a foam rubber wall. The station fire in Rhode Island was, you know, pyrotechnics, but the catalyst was foam rubber crates on the wall, which were the cheapest things they could find that they're trying to use for soundproofing, and they happened to have a gel that was gasoline-based in them. So it went up so quick. And so it's really amazing that, you know, two of these things that are huge impacts in the haunted attraction industry and what you're doing with your haunt today pretty much had the same basic ignition.
And there are people that still use foam in haunted houses. I assume it's a completely different type of foam, and there are people that use, you know, materials that could be considered flammable. I know that so many people have to either use non-flammable materials or spray it down, especially if they're using curtains and things like that, especially in, you know, mom-and-pop organizations. But, you know, Storm, you had an outdoor haunt. You had a trail. And I know we've been talking so much about indoor haunts and sprinkler systems and all that. How much different are the standards for maybe a haunt that's 50% outdoors and a trail and you go through a couple of buildings versus maybe 100% trail through the woods and through the cornfield versus an indoor haunt? I mean, what are some things that you can do on a trail that you can't do on an indoor
attraction? Well, it's a structure thing, and it is, you know, our specialists will probably be able to talk a little bit more too, but it is a regional thing. It is outdoors. Farms in a lot of areas can be grandfathered in. A lot of times, if there is no ceiling, it's not a structure with a permanent ceiling, you can get by with that. They've really made some changes over the past few years regarding tents and what you can do. They're looking more at tents as structures for these types of things. But it's really, you know, how much you want to do and what you're doing with it too, and being smart about it. You know, you think that fire wouldn't be an issue, but it is. We would have burlap bags, which would be barriers at times for you to walk through and stuff, and I would make sure that those were soaked down with the retardant because – and this is the funny thing. As much as we're frustrated and annoyed as haunters with cell phones and people walking through with them, that's probably been – one of the safer practices for us, because before that you'd have these people walking through your haunt with a freaking lighter in front of them to guide their way. And I mean, you know, now, okay, good. Use your $500 phone as a flashlight, you know, don't drop it and get it crushed. But I mean, we've had to tell our own actors, you're sitting on a pile of hay, don't smoke. So it's the little things that get by with it. So it's, you know, you're never really safe, and don't let your guard down. You want to have egress. You want to know what to do. Well, you have an outdoor haunt. You have temporary walls and stuff. It's a little easier and stuff. God forbid if there is an issue, those walls can come down pretty quick with a kick, but you don't want to rely on that. You still want to have exits. You still want to have your actors trained what to do in emergency. Know how to get people in and out of there and treat your set like it was a indoor haunt But luckily, you don't have as much of the issues with it and much of the caution. But if you do it right, you can do it fine.
I do. Was that Nicodemus? I do wonder because, you know, late October, walking through a cornfield, the corn's been dead for weeks and it's just dry as timber. I'm just amazed that there aren't more corn maze fires in this country. In fact, I can't recall one. Nothing stands out to mind right now. You know, and I think the last big haunted attraction I remember that actually had a major fire was Talon Falls about 7 years ago or so. I know they've rebuilt, but I don't know what the cause of that fire was.
Yeah, luckily if corn's still in the ground, it doesn't dry out as much as, say, hay and stuff. But again, you know, your LEDs and innovations with that, a lot of haunts, our trail, before I actually worked there, would use kerosene lanterns out on the trail. Now, luckily, it's through the woods and that type of thing, but you couldn't do that nowadays, and you wouldn't want to do that nowadays. But and it, luckily, it's so much easier. You can use low-voltage lighting for LEDs, and it'll work better than these kerosene lamps. But, you know, that was there, and you'd see some haunted mazes using fire pits and that type of thing, probably too close to it. And it's just a couple little circumstances can cause a disaster. And that's why these fire codes are in place. And, you know, gentlemen like our guests today, ladies and gentlemen, you know, are trying to help you with it. So, you know, a lot of times you see in the haunt industry that, you know, the fire marshals and the people with the laws are your enemy. The enemy is when something happens and you have your state legislator reacting to things, because that's what happened here in Rhode Island. You had the station fire, and it wasn't the fire departments and stuff reacting to it. It was your state legislators, and they just started coming up with every ridiculous thing. So it wasn't like they're just doing safe. No, you had to have $100,000 sprinkler system for your Knights of Columbus Hall that fit 50 people. And, you know, sometimes that kick can go too far, and it's not going to be the fire inspectors who are going too far with it. It's going to be people looking for votes and trying to placate to a larger audience and an uneducated audience.
You know, when it comes down to the fire inspection, guys, as scary as all of this sounds, I don't care what I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit, Jack, and you kick me in the head if I'm wrong, but I don't think I have. Pretty much every single department, when they come in for an inspection, is always looking for the exact same things. Am I right, Jack?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to look for exit. They're going to look for egress. They're going to look for blocked exits. They're going to look for how wide your passageways are. They're going to look for emergency lighting. They're going to look for fire extinguishers. They're going to look for over excessive use of extension cords, and then they're going to look for just a basic walkthrough of hazards. So in a nutshell, that's what they're looking for.
Right.
That's it. So if you can go into your inspection, you know, and we've talked about all these things, and you know, most people are just scared to death probably now. It all comes down to these things. So all we're saying to you guys is, listen, the fire inspector is there to save your business, and they're there to save your life, basically, because if anything happens at your attraction, it's your butt on the line. So not only is the rest of your life wrecked, now you've lost everything you have invested. So look at it that way. Number two is, we're all looking for the same thing. When I go into a fire inspection, and if I walk in that place, for the most part, a first impression is a big deal. If it's a complete hellhole, I'm going to be like, huh. Oh my gosh, we're not
going to strike one.
Yeah,
strike one.
You know, if I walk in and you know, to do an inspection, and everybody's outside smoking cigarettes, and you know, they look like hell, and their place looks like hell, well, it's going to be a bad day for them because they don't care. And so, if you come in there prepared and understand that we're all looking for the same basic things, it's easy. It's so easy. What I tell people is this, and if you got a notepad and pen and paper out, now's the time to pull it out. If you have a binder, and I walk in and say, hey, I'm here to do your fire inspection, and you go, okay, hey, Buck, Well, here's what we have. I've got fire extinguishers here, 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 and here. I have exits every 75 feet. They're located here, 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 and here. Everything I have is 12-volt DC, and everything is ground fault, no extension cord. And, you know, just if they give me a plan in a book, especially for something like we're talking about here, man, I mean, what would you do, Jack? You'd do the same thing, wouldn't you? I'd be like,
you're literally taking the words out of my mouth on how to present, you know, a plan to the fire marshal. And that's exactly what it is. It's literally having a written fire plan. It helps you as the business owner stay organized, and it also helps you teach your staff, as the haunt owner, teach your staff what the plan is. And then you need to actually practice that fire drill, emergency plan, so on and so forth. And you also need to practice with your staff the usage of, at least in Maryland, you're supposed to teach your staff how to use a fire extinguisher. But it's, even if it's not required, if you state that you did fire extinguisher and you have it in your fire plan, and you have presented that to your fire marshal, they're like, oh man, they're ahead of the game. But having this fire plan written down in a notebook and showing that each one of your staff members went through this training on a specific day or night, or will be going through it on a specific day and night, depending on obviously when you meet with the fire marshal, that shows that you have a plan and you're prepared. Having a meeting with the local fire department for access for the actual fire department apparatus to your facility. So whether you're inside or outside, having a plan for the local fire department to get their equipment in the case of an emergency, and showing that you have that, again, you're ahead of the game. So those are two very important things. And actually, and for the state of Maryland, having some of those things is required, a type of fire training for your staff and any fire extinguisher training. So very important.
What's really neat too is everything that you listed off there, with the exception of, you know, fire extinguishers, which are specialized equipment, those are safety items in multiple situations. Yeah, God forbid, and you know, you're probably not going to have a fire at your haunt, but you're going to have somebody have a panic attack. You're going to have somebody who suddenly is going to have a seizure with a strobe, even though that they'd never had that issue before. And knowing where the exits are, having emergency lighting, being able to have that plan to have rescue come in and out of each scene, whether you're indoors or outdoors, that's going to save a lot. And it could probably save a life. And it's all based on the same fire principles, which is actually pretty neat.
So part of our, sorry to interrupt, but part of ours is having a haunter's handbook and rules of conduct for each of our actors. And under that, it spells out the actual sections of it, spell out, you know, fire safety, emergency situations and plans. So if there's a fire drill, or if there's an actual fire, or if there's a medical emergency, there is a plan in place, and each person knows what to do. So that's actually spelled out in the handbook. So if any haunt owner out there does not have a handbook for their actors, I highly recommend you create one. And it literally is a playbook of everything and anything that you expect or want out of your actors to perform, do from day one to the end of the end of the season, that covers you and them between each other, between them and the customer, so on and so forth. I mean, I'm sure Buck has his, and I know other haunt owners have theirs, and it's not something that's generally shared amongst haunt owners, but the actual verbiage, if you will, it seems to me.
I stole mine from you, Jack. What are you talking about?
No, you did not. I can't even tell you who I stole mine from. But hey, that goes back to another point. Networking. Networking.
I want to bring up something here that Jack, you just touched about. Jim, with Maul and your actors going out to various haunted attractions during the course of the season, are the Maul actors, when they go to a haunt in Indiana versus one in Ohio versus one in Kentucky, are they trained on safety aspects when they get there? Or are they not supposed to get involved if there's a situation? Hopefully, you never will have an actor involved in a situation, but do those haunt owners teach the members of Maul? And you know, I've only worked at one, but we didn't get any safety training per se when we were working at the one haunt that the one time I was there. But
with the exception of that haunt, all of my actors are trained in safety. When we get to a venue, the first thing I tell them is to locate all the pertinent emergency places. Most of the time they're outside, so they know where help is, when help is. But beyond that, I'm fortunate enough to have a paramedic on staff. Not only a paramedic, but I also have a nurse practitioner on staff. So that gives us a bit of extra training in case the need may arise.
Here's a tidbit. I don't know. You know, I know different haunted attractions around the country are located within different jurisdictions, but I think there's a lot of jurisdictions that have volunteer fire departments, and even some of the career departments would do this. But I don't see where you couldn't reach out to your local fire department and have them on standby on location that night and offer them some form of donation at the end of the season. And even if it's $1,000, they would love to just sit there and watch the girls and the guys go by and hang out and take that $1,000 donation. And that donation could save you tens of thousands of dollars just by having them on scene. It's a thought. It's just something that you could, it's an extra option. I don't know.
But that would work better for volunteer departments.
Right.
You know, if your jurisdiction is covered by a smaller volunteer department, they're always looking for funds. Yep. The problem you run into, I can't speak for you, Jack, but the problem with my department being a professional department, everything you got to go through, you know,
union,
backstaffing and, you know, all everything. Yeah. But it is definitely an option. I think, you know, as I sit and listen to this and everything I've said, and everything Jack said, and everything you guys have said, it all comes down to one thing. And that's planning and plan ahead.
Yeah.
And responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that anybody that's listening to this, if you have not already watched the video of the Station nightclub fire, you need to.
Like, it is as the soon most boring thing ever.
As soon as you're done listening to this podcast, you need to search the Station nightclub fire and you need to watch it in its entirety. And then you need to imagine that being a haunted attraction, your haunted attraction. And are you capable of preventing that situation? Are you prepared to handle that situation if it were to arise? And those are the questions you need to ask yourself after you watch it, because that's reality. That's something that has happened, and that's something that we're trying to prevent. And it only can be prevented through education, and that's kind of the main point of this podcast, is through education. Because what affects you, that one haunt owner in the middle of nowhere, affects every haunt owner around the whole entire country, and that's evident from the escape rooms in Poland. It's already affecting the escape rooms around, you know, the nation. So do your homework. Make your plan.
You know, talking about the Station nightclub fire, that video is about 6.5 minutes long. And if you never watched this video, in 6.5 minutes, 100 people die. And 100 people die, actually, in the first 3 minutes of the video. Yeah. And the people are trapped in this video within about 1 minute and 18 seconds. Now, having been in the fire service for 20 years, and Jack can tell you the same thing, I am telling you right now, it happens so fast within less than a minute. with less than a minute, people. And if you don't believe me, watch that video. But yeah, that's what you're preparing for. So if you plan ahead, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's one of the scariest things ever. And I have a unique situation because I was flying out to Wisconsin the next day. So I was up late packing, and I happened to have the news on. And they broke in with it. And the local news had no idea what they are doing or what they had. And they kept airing live from the scene, and they kept airing live as this video came in because there was somebody actually recording inside at the time. So I actually saw some of the stuff go across the air, which probably isn't even in the video. There's one quick glimpse, and I think I'd only seen it live on TV once, and it was the people trying to get out. And one of the issues was one of the exit doors swung the wrong way. So everybody trying to get out this front door, and literally people are piled on top of each other, gasping for air as black smoke is coming out to them. It is, you know, we use the term haunting in such a fun way, but this is the type of haunting that sticks with you and scares the living hell out of you, because it's not something you should ever want to see another human being, the situation they're in. And I worked with a guy at Trails who was in the station nightclub when it caught fire. And he had suffered some major damage and stuff. He'd be an actor, but he had back problems and issues all the time from that. He'd act a few nights for us, but most of the time, at best, he could help and drive the tractors and stuff.
Being a musician, you're talking about the stage fire. Being a musician at that time, and seeing, you know, the band I worked with used pyrotechnics, so we saw that. About a band that's, you know, they've got techniques with a licensed technician and everything. The moment we saw that, we're not using this anymore. We're not going to take that risk. And, you know, we took every precaution. We had fire extinguishers everywhere. We had, you know, our stuff, even though our stuff was a professional, we took all the steps we needed to make sure that every base was covered. And after seeing what happened with that, we're like, okay, yeah. No, we're not using this anymore. I'm not even gonna even set up a sparkler, you know, in on stage anymore, because that was just terrifying.
Guys, we're looking at the clock and it's starting to wind down the time. Final questions.
What are some of the pitfalls and things? I mean, you guys have talked about your binders and your books. What other little things can owners and even actors themselves do to make a difference at their haunt for fire and safety in general?
That's a great question. You know, I'll tell you what I have my actors do at my haunt is every single actor is assigned to an area. And once they check in, their first job is to go to their area and police their area. I want to make sure that all trip hazards are taken care of, that there's no wires loose, or, you know, I mean, no crew, anything. Every actor is responsible for going through their area, double checking it. Once they do, they sign off on it, give it to their what I call zone leader, and then their zone leader turns into copying me at the beginning of the night. But, you know, just having the actors talking about a couple things, you know, fire extinguisher training, understanding where the fire extinguisher's at, policing their area, and taking their job serious. You know, I think a lot of these actors, they don't quite understand, well, the majority of them don't understand the big picture. If they can actually have some ownership in this and take this thing serious, and you give them a little responsibility, it's going to give them feel like they have a little bit of ownership, a little bit of say, and they're going to be a little more vested in your attraction.
Yeah, I'm right in line with Buck on that. As far as having some ownership of your areas, our zone leaders take responsibility of their zones, and they have their actors within each of the rooms check in. It starts with the beginning of the season training on knowing where fire extinguishers, emergency exits are, and the emergency procedure for that specific zone, because we're an basically outdoor haunted attraction. We have small, you know, outbuildings, but the smaller buildings have to have emergency exit signs and emergency lighting. And then we obviously have to have fire extinguishers for those areas. So the fire extinguisher training, that's something that I have the ability to do. We have a prop that I have through work that we have the ability to give that kind of training. I think this year we're going to be offering CPR and AED training to our people just to have, because I also have the ability to give that type of training to our people.
That's fantastic.
At no cost. So I have those abilities just because of my connections. Not touting myself, but it's just, if I have it, the ability to do something, I'll do it.
Let me jump in really quick on that one, Jack, and you're completely right. But what I will say on that is a lot of departments are available for that kind of training, depending on the size of the department. So if you contact my department and you want a fire extinguisher class, they'll make it happen. So it's not that you don't have to know. It's not necessarily having to know somebody. These things are available. CPR classes are available for the public through most fire departments. Mm-hmm. Fire extinguisher classes available. Emergency planning, communication, all these types of things are available a lot of times if you ask.
In this day and age, you have to make that relationship with that local fire department that you're with. You have to create a relationship with them. Like, get on a first name basis with the lieutenant, captain, or chief, or assistant chief, or whatever the case may be. Like, walk in the door, bring some cookies or donuts. The guys will love you, and just introduce yourself and say who you are, what you got, and more likely than not, they're going to want to come see what you got. And even if you're offering them free tickets, a handful, and they come out, they're going to bring their girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever. You're building a relationship that will take you to the next level that you need to be.
See, and understand this. It isn't just the fire department. You also are going to have to talk to the electrical inspector and, you know, all these people. So build these relationships. Be open. Don't hide anything. If you're something, and then you're in trouble. So... It's just having a plan, making these relationships, but being prepared is going to make your life so much easier.
And I think the biggest thing that owners and even actors can do with this is stop looking at safety, at fire safety, as an expense, as a hurdle. This is an investment in your haunt. If you want people to come back to your haunt and be better than the haunt down the street, it's a much more savvy world. People want to feel that they want there for the fancy experience of being scared, but they also want to feel safe with it and know that I'm coming home. You look like a professional operation if there are signs for AEDs, even if it's up by your ticket window. You know, people notice that sometimes even subconsciously, and it's more and more nowadays. You know, do you feel better going to a mall where you see AEDs and you'll see, you know, safety and security around, or do you go to the sketchy mall where, you know, the railings are barely hanging on and, you know, you wouldn't know when AED is from a GNC. You know, it's not an expense. It's an investment in your haunt, and it will pay forward in saving lives and making you a more professional and better operation.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, I know the clock is saying it is late here. We've been talking about some amazing information here. Again, folks, if you are interested in owning a haunt, this is something you're going to have to deal with all the time, every year. It's not just you pass it once and you're done. So I'm assuming at some point you might get a second inspection or a third, depending on if there's an incident at your haunt. Or every year you're going to have to take care of things, especially if you redo and build more stuff and all this. And if you're an existing haunt, you know, I hope you've got that good relationship with that fire inspector, because if you don't, you may not open. But I want to take the time to thank our guests here. This is part of the show we affectionately call the plugs. This is where you get to plug whatever haunt you're working with, or if you're speaking at a convention or anything like that. Jack, let's start with you. Tell us how people can get more information about the haunt that you run up in Maryland.
So obviously we're on all the social media pages, Facebook and Instagram, literally Snapchat, LinkedIn, everything. And then our, you know, website is twistedfieldsofterror.com. And if anyone, I don't know if I'm opening a can of worms, but if anyone, you know, has any basic questions or needs some advice on a starting point, I can hopefully point you in the right direction. Feel free to reach out just to, you know, any of those pages. You can IM me or whatever. It's fine. But yeah, those are the pages that you can find us at.
Excellent. How about you, Buck? Where can people get more information about your haunts? And what about, are you going to be teaching at Midwest, or are you going to teach at Transworld next year? What you got coming up?
I'll be at Transworld again next year. Probably teach some. My website, I own the Fear Asylum Haunted House up in South Dakota. The website's fear-asylum.com. It's through there. Any of the social media platforms, just like Jack. If you want to send me an email, if you have any questions, you know, send them to Jack. If you just want to drink beer, go ahead and send me an email, and we can take care of that. But Jack will answer all the pertinent questions. I'm going to delegate that down since you called me.
More of a vodka cranberry kind of guy, anyways.
If I can help you out, you can send me an email at buck@station5productions.com. And you know, hey, we're there to help. You know, if you see me at a convention or something, you have a question, just punch me in the head. I'd be more than happy to talk to you and help you out if I can.
Honestly, at the end of the day, something that affects one of us can affect all of us, and that is. Really the biggest thing that I've learned from this industry is, so if we can help prevent some catastrophic event, it's going to help me in the future. So I'm all about spreading whatever little bit of wealth of knowledge that I may or may not have.
Excellent. Buck, you broke up just a little bit when you were given the name of the haunt and the website. What was the haunt and what is that website again?
So I own the Fear Asylum Haunted House in Brookings, South Dakota. It's fear-asylum.com. Or you can go ahead and send me an email through my production company, buck@station5productions.com. And I'm with Jack. You know, if you have a question and, you know, shoot me an email and I'll be happy, you know, if I can help you out or at least point you in a direction, I'd be more than happy to. And just like, you know, I just said before, if you see me at a convention or something like that, take the class, you know, just if you have a question, we're there to help you. It's not a big deal. It's not as scary as it sounds. If you have a plan.
There you go. So be like the scouts and be prepared. I want to thank Jack Beckwith and Guy Burdick for being amazingly informative guests tonight. I also want to thank our hosts for providing some interesting content, including Storm.
Hey, great conversation tonight. Gotta love safety. It's safety week at my company this week. So being construction, it's always a big push, and it's great to see it down to haunt level. So be responsible, and hey, you haunt owners and other actors, it's a podcast. Go make other people listen to it. You can play us back and listen to it all as much as you want and get something out of it. So awesome, and thanks everybody tonight.
Meat Hook Jim.
Well, I shouldn't have done it, but I lit that fart. Now the dog has no air.
Not safe, man. The Haunstrumentalist, Jerry Vane.
Coming soon is going to be the video version of this episode where we get to see these two guys do a love fest for 2019 with the dog sitting there making faces at everybody at the same time.
Well, good thing I don't have a camera. It'd just be me cheering. The Bruins taking down Columbus tonight. Hey, Columbus people.
Yeah. Bite me.
From the Midwest?
We were voting for the Avalanche anyway, so.
I will be going to Midwest.
You will?
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you there.
All right, very good. I'm hoping to act in Hell's Gate. So.
What's
My
that?
Name is Drew Badger. I am in Charlotte, North Carolina. And unfortunately, I will not be at MHC this year, so I will have to catch
you. Woohoo!
Oh, bite me. We'll catch you guys at Transworld next year. Thank you again, Jack, Buck, all the hosts. This is the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show.
The love fest continues. Get your Kleenex.
Get a room, you guys. Jesus.
I'm active.
We have to have the video on. We haven't seen each other in so long.
I know. It's been like a couple months since March.
Eyes.
Yeah, look at my puppy. Look at my car.
No. Don't be jealous. Don't be jealous.
So
don't be
dreamy.
Well, the dog was cute. Can't say about the other two guys, but the dog was cute.
Yeah, she needed to go outside. This is why we don't do video.
No,
yeah, we can never get anything accomplished.
Cat sitting in my head and two monitors going.
Once Jim started doing it shirtless, then we were like, nope, no more video. We're done.
Well, when you said you wanted to do it on Skype, I thought the whole point was to have the video on.
It just sounds better than
it could have been a phone conference.
Sounds better. Honestly, the quality sounds better.
You're going to be so negative all the time.
I'm a virgin, all right? I'm a virgin.
Looking for a comprehensive ticketing solution for your haunted attraction? HauntPay has the answer. We skip the features you don't need and focus on the ones you like, such as timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundle and combo tickets, social media discounts. And now featuring all-in-one options including managing your tickets online and at the door, as well as upselling and managing your merchandise and concessions, with a comprehensive report on everything at the end of the night. Head on over to HauntPay.com and get started in 60 seconds for free.
And ladies and gentlemen, it's time to see if you're listening closely to the show, because it's time for the May edition of the Gruesome Giveaway, sponsored by Screamline Studios. Visit ScreamlineStudios.com, check out all their wonderful stuff, or if you're lucky, you could be a winner of some of said fine stuff right here and right now. I'm going to ask you a question. The answer is in the show. Email us your name, your phone number, and the answer to contest@bigscaryshow.com before midnight on Monday, May the 20th, and we will select a random entrant. And if you are picked the winner, you could win a very fine prize from Screamline Studios. Now, the question this month is, and this comes to us from Veister, so maybe that's a hint, what upcoming Marvel film will focus on a horror-related character? And he sends me a bonus. Who will be playing him in the movies? And a double bonus, where did he originate? And if you can name the comic books or the issues that he appeared in, Veister says he will deliver the prize to you personally. We'll see. So anyway, folks, if you think you know that answer, get it to us before midnight on May 20th. Send us your name, your number, and the answer to contest@bigscaryshow.com. Good luck. Thank you, Screamline Studios. And on with the show.
Gravetone Productions. Death awaits on the Big Scary Show. We'll be right back.
Ready to dress up your show? Need to pump new life into old props? Just want to show something no one else has? Do what Alice Cooper, Distortions Unlimited, and A-list haunters all over the world do. Wear Bunkerum. Durable, handcrafted, dependable, year after year. Bunkerum. When you scare enough to wear the very best. Voncaron.com. VONCHARON.com.
Once again, Frighteners, welcome to yet another edition of the Weister's Haunted Vista. Right out of the box, let me apologize for not being present last episode, but as was noted a few shows ago on the Round Table of Terror itself, life sometimes does intrude.
What have you done?
Oh, nothing that can't be rectified. So, here we are in mid-May. Everybody's going to conventions, everybody's building their home haunts and working on their props, but what is the big, big news and headlines in fantasy, science fiction, and horror? None other than Avengers Endgame.
That's right!
Basically, I'm going to do a review of the film itself, plus a look at what's up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and a look back at what has been done so far, plus a few other tidbits. So, if you have not seen the film by this point, and if you haven't, why not?
Sorry, man.
In other words, boys and girls, if you haven't seen the film, this is your 10-second warning. In other words,
spoiler alert.
Everybody get the picture? Good. We'll proceed then. First of all, Endgame is nothing like last year's Infinity War. This is a three-part film which has three distinct layers and acts to it. Initially taking place about 23 days after the effects of what Thanos did with the Infinity Gauntlet, the film follows the heroes' fates, and it displays quite a bit of flair for emotion and drama and tragedy. As the heroes come to grips with the fact that they failed in stopping Thanos from wiping out half of the universe, new characters and new elements are added to the plot. And as it thickens, there is a 5-year gestation period where the heroes attempt to go on with their lives until circumstances come around that change their attitudes, in particular Tony Stark's. Part 2 of this film is a time travel which set the pieces in place for the third part, which is the grand finale and a wrap-up to 10 years' worth of films that Marvel has made a huge, huge career out of over the last decade. I'm not going to give too much particularly away. I did promise to keep this as spoiler-free as possible, as per request by Drew, but I will say there are some amazing elements to this film and quite a few big surprises in regards to the hero's final fates. Now, I don't have to say much in terms of most people know what happens to both Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. It's all over Facebook, social media, the internet, wherever you want to look, and if you have imagined managed to avoid this information up to this point, hey man, my hat is off to you. In regards to both of their characters and their portrayals, it's a satisfying conclusion to both of their story arcs, though I have a funny feeling we have not seen the last of either of them, at least not in a complete capacity, but who knows what the future will bring. Marvel is about to launch Phase 2 of their operation, and well, that's a whole new ball of wax entirely. By the way, if you haven't seen it by now, and if you haven't seen Endgame yet, please avoid the trailer, the second one, for Spider-Man Far From Home, as it opens up a whole new can of worms. And there's bits and pieces of information in there as well as to what Marvel's going to be doing next, but that's a horse of another color right now. As superhero films go, Endgame is probably one of the top three ever produced, right alongside Christopher Nolan's 2008 masterpiece The Dark Knight and 2017's Wonder Woman. This really will surpass all of your expectations. It will also surpass the tolerance of your bladder, as the film is over 3 hours long, so basically go hit the stalls before you go see the film.
Sounded reasonable to me.
I did find the time travel aspect of this film pretty entertaining, as it rewrites quite a few of the characters' histories, in particular Tom Hiddleston's Loki, as essentially, if you go back in time, by this film's description, your past that you have come from, or I should say future that you have come from, is essentially rewritten, and you start over from that point which you rewrote it. Is everybody getting this yet?
For the record, this is what making things worse looks like.
Yeah, I kind of thought so. Regardless, the film catapults itself into a dramatic and final conclusion which reestablishes and undoes pretty much everything Thanos did in Infinity War, with a few twists and turns here which I will not give away. But in terms of highlights, the whole film is a huge accomplishment in terms of storytelling, in terms of ambition, and in terms of arc. Don't forget, they've had this planned out since Tony Stark first said, "I am Iron Man," way back in the 2008 self-titled film. You go figure out how much planning went into this, and it really makes your head dizzy. I do believe the Russo brothers should be commended for the immensity of their scope and the execution that it followed. It really is one of those films you have to see two or three times to catch everything that's going on, because there is a lot to take in, and as I said, the three-hour runtime will make concentration a little difficult. But the reward comes towards the end with the huge amount of action and all these wonderful, beloved characters all showing up one last time to give Thanos and his minions the battle of a lifetime. If you look back on the last 10 years of what Marvel has been doing in terms of Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, even the semi-aborted Hulk film in 2008, which has some roots in the current Marvel Cinematic Universe, plus Guardians of the Galaxy, and most recently the Black Panther and Captain Marvel films. By the way, were you as disappointed as I was that she wasn't in the film all that much? Well, her feature film was only about 6 and 8 weeks previous, so I can kind of understand that, but I was hoping to see a little more action with her involved. I think it's worthy of note that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has definitely changed the way motion pictures are made, and the horror industry would be wise to take a little note of what's going on. Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not expecting characters like Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger to don capes and hats and masks and all that sort of thing and going up beating up whatever comes along their way. But I do believe the horror industry, we're going to have to take a little bit of a note of what has transpired here with the success of these films, in as much as the attitude and the approach of horror films may have to change due to the success of all of this. These films have upped the ante in terms of fantasy in general, in terms of plot lines, special effects, and execution, and it might be a good idea for our genre to take a look at these sort of things. A little more action and maybe just a little less screaming maidens would be a good idea. In addition to which, better, more feasible, more realistic, and more attainable plot lines would be a very, very smart move, or at least sophisticate things to a higher level to keep the audience intrigued. Last year's Halloween extension with Jamie Lee Curtis was a prime example of what I'm talking about, a more intelligent, thought-out script with a far more sophisticated plot line would do the horror genre much, much good at this stage in the game. In terms of both action and special effects, the fantasy and horror genres are somewhat, actually they're majorly interlinked, and it would be a good idea for us to pay attention to what just happened with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And to be fair, a few of the films that have been released as of late have taken note of what's going on. Take note of The Meg, despite its cheesiness, Pet Sematary, and the first of the two films adapting Stephen King's It. All have had their eye on what's going on with the superhero genre and have adapted accordingly. Take note of the camera angles, the action shots, and some of the composition of the material that's going on before your eyes. There are definite hints that this is being taken note of, and I suspect the influence of these films will be continuing to infiltrate the aspects of horror films, horror television, and things of that nature. Take note of the upcoming Godzilla King of the Monsters, which will be released on May 31st. This has a definite superhero vibe. You catch all those trailers? There is going to be a lot of slam-bang action in this flick, and I think it's going to be a big hit. I've been wrong before, but this one definitely has that superhero Marvel Comics edge to it. What does the future hold for the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Well, obviously July 2nd, as I mentioned before, sees the release of Spider-Man Far From Home. But in the next year or two, we're going to see the second Black Panther and Doctor Strange films, as well as James Gunn's third Guardians of the Galaxy. Add to that Disney's acquisition of Marvel, not to mention the reacquisition of both the characters of the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, added to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and well, you can see where this is all going. On a side note, the DC Cinematic Universe definitely needs to take a close look at what's going on here, because they're just absolutely getting clobbered. And Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy was a long, long time ago. And one Wonder Woman film does not make a legacy. Hint, hint, hint. Justice League?
Bah! Humbug!
Get out of here!
Now, as for horror elements in these films, Marvel had its fair share. Films like Doctor Strange, Thor the Dark World, they were bits and pieces of it, but it wasn't direct. Though I will say 2018's Venom starts to point to a more superhero monster kind of crossover. And a couple of upcoming films definitely are worthy of taking note. In particular, Morbius, the Living Vampire, introduced as one of the more supernatural, non-supernatural enemies of Spider-Man all the way back in Amazing Spider-Man 101 and 2, is finally being given his own feature film, being portrayed no less than by Jared Leto, late of Suicide Squad Joker fame. Also worthy of note, DC are relaunching their Swamp Thing character in a much more gothic, horror-orientated vein. This has a lot of potential and promise. Go check out the trailer if you haven't already, and I look forward to see what they're going to do with this. Now, for fans of psychological horror, I am holding my breath for this October's release of Joker, featuring Joaquin Phoenix, probably the only other actor I could think of who could give Heath Ledger's portrayal a run for its money. I'll be very curious to see how he handles the character, but the recent released teaser trailer promises many great things. Wrapping things up here, Avengers Endgame is a wonderfully conceived and executed conclusion to 10 years of superhero films of the Marvel Universe that really has to be seen several times to be appreciated. A remarkable achievement in both superhero and storytelling in general, the Russo brothers have outdone themselves and outclassed just about all the competition available in producing something that will endure for many, many years to come as the prime example of comic book superhero movie telling. Very much worthy of multiple viewings and a final grand testament to the genius of the late, great Stan Lee. Comments, critiques, suggestions, drop me a line at erveister@woh.rr.com or look me up on Facebook under Eric Veister. I will respond to both, but you can catch me quicker on Facebook. I tend to be there more. Also, check out my Blogspot page, the Veister's Halloween Haunt Journal, featuring news and reviews that you can use and abuse. And there will be an update to my Tribute to Godzilla page, as the new film will be released May 31st. Hint, 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 yes, I'll be reviewing it eventually. And as 2019 marks the character's 65th anniversary, not to mention a small slew of new films out there, an update was on the cards anyway. Next time on the Vista, I honestly can't say. Having an episode off recharged my batteries a bit, so I have a ton of things on the back burner, even more so now. But whatever it'll be fun, it'll be cool, it'll be scary, it'll be spectacular, and yeah, I better shut up now.
Do you know what you're full of?
So, until next time, always remember Svengoolie's credo, who, may I add, will be passing his 40th anniversary this June 16th, and yes, I will be doing a piece on this. Always remember what Uncle Sven said and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite Mama goodnight, and always remember, I hid the Infinity Stones because Drew just didn't know how to handle them.
I knew that sound. Someone's flossing their brain.
So until next time, prop well, my haunting friends, and hope to see a few of you at the Midwest Haunters Convention's debut in Chicago this year. Take care until 2 weeks from now.
Are you afraid this haunt season? Afraid of long lines of dissatisfied customers just at your ticket booth? Afraid of all the processing fees and hassle with credit cards? Are you afraid to make that jump into online ticketing? Well, take the leap. TicketLeap. TicketLeap will give you online options for your customer. Beautiful event pages to give every single ticketing option you have now and loads of possibility. Smart tools to spread the word, engage with your customers, and connect to social media with great, simple payment processing and the friendly customer support to go with it. Do things you haven't dreamed of. Hey, what's a selfie ticket? Check out TicketLeap.com. They're going to show you what to do. And no haunt's too big or too small for them to process. You're going to have a beautiful event page, even if you have a home haunt. Hey, they have options for free events that you may have, and what better way to collect donations for a community. Tickets under $5, the fee is only 25 cents. Find out what TicketLeap has to offer to you. TicketLeap.com.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following sponsors: Screamline Studios, Dark Imaginings, Von Caron Productions, Haunt Pay, Ticket Leap, and Creepy Collection. We would also like to thank Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, as well as the Fordga hosts, including Storm, Rants and More, HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer and Traveling Actor Troupe. For more information, check out MaulMonsters.com, that's MaulMonsters.com. Drew Badger, actor, trainer, and consultant. Find out more at RabbitBadger.org. And Jerry Vane, the Hauntstrumentalist, for all your heavy metal and haunt needs. JerryVane.com. And finally, you, the listener. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.